I think because from as human beings, since we've had language, the way we've communicated important things is through stories.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is Ben Eubanks, your host, and today I am thrilled to be with you. This week has me traveling and speaking at a few events, and on top of that, I'm working through the last chapter of the book, which has been a very interesting process. I'm naturally an optimist, but the last chapter is all about the challenges of adopting AI technology for HR leaders and what to expect in the form of hurdles and things like data privacy with the new GDPR law, algorithm aversion, where we mistrust some of the things that systems recommend, or even bias that might exist in a system that we accidentally programmed into it. So I'm talking about those kinds of things. It's been an interesting process. You know, I'm this close, if you could see me holding my fingers close together, I'm this close to wrapping it up. I'm very excited. I know you're excited too, because when I do, I'll have a few months in between when it goes in, when it's published, where I will talk about anything that isn't just AI for HR leaders, although I think this is really important. Anyway, the reason we're here today is because I recently caught up with my good friend, Molly Lombardi, over at Aptitude Research Partners. Molly taught me a lot about what it means to be an analyst, and as you'll quickly gather from the conversation, we are two nerdy peas in a pod when we get together. The thing I really wanted to talk about with Molly was stories. I think I retell a story or two that you might have heard here before, but we talk about the case, the importance of telling stories and storytelling when you're sharing data, when you're trying to build a business case, when you're trying to influence others, and more. We recorded the session a couple weeks ago at the Silk Road Connections User Conference in San Antonio, but the content is really timeless. In the book, see, there it is again, another reference, I share dozens of stories to help illustrate the value and the opportunity for AI to support and augment the work we're doing as HR leaders. Someone asked me recently why they should read a book that's 50,000 plus words about artificial intelligence and HR. That seems like overkill, right? And I said it's not because of how I defined AI. It's not because I talked with some secret company that knows all the answers. It's because the stories are going to help you grasp why this concept matters, how to apply it to your own company, to your own job, and even to this broader career of HR that we all know and love. What's this career going to look like in a few years? I probably give you some insights into that in the book. So, thank you again for joining me today. I really appreciate your time, and I'll always take that very seriously. By the way, if there's ever a topic you'd love to see covered on the show, feel free to reach out to me at any time. Ben@upstarthr.com is a good email for me. @BenEubanks on Twitter, or just Google me. You can't miss. I've been getting great feedback from people recently, new listeners, people really enjoying some of the recent episodes. This thing is rolling, and I appreciate each and every one of you that tunes in to listen to the episodes every week. Now, on with the show. Hey everybody, this is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human, and today I'm joined by a good friend, a colleague.
And a human.
A human, a family member, whatever else I want to call her, label her, she'd take it. Molly Lombardi. Welcome, Molly.
Thanks so much, Ben. So happy to be here with you in person.
I know. That is uncommon. We're both here in San Antonio for the Silk Road Connections Conference.
San Antonio.
Yep. Absolutely. Loving the humidity and heat and everything else.
Yes, from doing. I had to have a wardrobe change today because I was still dressed for winter in New England, not springtime in Texas. So I was wearing my black and white tweed jacket this morning. It just really didn't cut it here in Texas. So.
Oh, goodness gracious.
A wardrobe change.
Well, cool. So, again, so good to see you in person. We actually had some time to catch up last night. That was fun.
Lovely.
And we're both presenting a couple times at the event where they're keeping us busy. Tell me about the stuff you're covering.
Sure. So I'm talking here about three journeys. I'm talking about the journey from candidate to employee, which I think is a pretty traditional way we think about onboarding and things like that. But then I'm also talking about the journey from potential to performance, which is sort of a look at how we as managers and leaders can take our own journey from our own potential to performance, but also how we coach that out of our team members and help take them from potential to performance. And then the last one is about the journey from a job to a career. And we're going to talk a lot about mobility and how you help yourself, but also your team see how they can not just have a job with your organization, but really grow and spread their wings and move through your organization, not just up, but around, and help people retain talent through that journey. So.
Excellent. So running the full gamut pretty much of everything you can run across.
Trying to, yeah.
There's probably something else we could lump in. We could throw some offboarding conversation in the very end, but.
Well, right, and if you do your onboarding right, you know, right, it's it establishes that relationship that takes you through even boomerangs.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, fun stuff. I'm doing a couple presentations, some workshops actually around innovation and helping people come up with some new ideas for processes and everything else. And it's funny, I was talking to an attendee just a minute ago. They were telling me they enjoyed the session, and I said, did it surprise you? You're at a technology conference about a user conference basically, and the ideas we're talking about have nothing to do with technology. They're all about the process. They're all about the people, like all those things, how to engineer people to do things that we need them to do, influence and stuff like that.
Well, and you know, I've always said that if we could buy the tool and fix the problem, we could all go home, right? Yep. Which would be really a bummer for us because it's a pretty fun career. But, I read something the other day. Somebody said technology is culture.
Hmm.
And was it technology or systems? Systems are culture. Because if you think about it, if you really are living your culture, your system should reinforce that. If you say, we're a learning organization, but you have a green screen LMS interface, right? I'm dating myself with a green screen reference, but, do you really care about it?
Yeah.
If you say, really, really believe in development, but you don't let people have time to, develop themselves, and you don't have the systems in place to support it, do you really have a learning culture?
That's one of the things I wrote about a couple years ago. I wrote this kind of, it's a culture manifesto, basically, organizational culture. And it was about, if you want to change your culture, you have to change the fundamental things that you're doing, especially as HR leaders, we have the opportunity because who you're hiring, how you're hiring them, how you're moving them, developing them, as you talked about a minute ago, how you're moving them through the organization or out if they're not a fit, all those things wrap in.
Well, and I think it's so interesting because I've had the debate many times, can you actually shape culture or can you only shape behavior? And I would argue that culture is a little bit like bacterial culture, right? You can deduce that it's there, and you can either decide that it's good, and so you create the conditions for it to continue to thrive, or you got to kill it. Mm. And I think the only way you kill it is by hiring differently, rewarding for different behaviors. And so I would argue, and I'd be curious to hear your opinion, but that you can't actually change culture. You can change the behaviors and the actors upon that, but the culture will either thrive or be denied oxygen. That's the choice you have.
It's going to reflect the people you have. So if you have the wrong people, it's going to reflect that. And again, it's hard to say. One of the things about culture is like you want to create a good quote unquote culture, but it's different
but
for everybody.
But good for what? Right.
Different for everybody. If you're in a manufacturing company, it's a different look than if you're in retail or whatever.
And that's okay.
Else.
I always say too about engagement and culture. It doesn't have to attract everybody. It has to attract the people you need. Right.
That's one of the things. Actually, when I was years ago recruiting, we put videos out on our Facebook. Put videos out on our Facebook channel with different things about us, and my focus was I want the people that are interested in this to say that's the company for me. See, I want people that were like that's kind of weird or strange or different, and like please self-select out before you apply. That helps us.
So I have a story for you, which will get us into the topic we wanted to talk which is a great company, Regeneron, who I did a couple of case studies with over the years, and they were a biopharma tech company, and their recruiting brand was basically you're not smart enough to work here. Because they needed really cutting edge thinkers. And so when they talked to their people who were really cutting edge, they basically were like, well, no one's smart enough to work with us. And so you had to be cocky enough and smart enough to be like, you don't think I'm smart enough to work there? I'm going to come work there and show everybody. And I thought that was brilliant, right? Because a lot of people would look at that and be turned off, but the type of people they needed would be like, oh, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, like I've got the cred. I can show you what I can do.
You say I can't do it. Let me show you. I'll do it twice on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll do it twice as hard just to prove that I can.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What was the name of that company?
Regeneron. I think they've been bought now, but.
I'll have to go try to dig some of that stuff up because that's interesting.
Yeah,
I love that idea.
They had a great leader who was really, really good at this and really had diagnosed their culture. He didn't invent it. He diagnosed their culture. And he brought the oxygen to the parts of it that were moving them forward. So.
Very intriguing. So you alluded to it a little bit.
Yes.
One of the things we want to talk about a little bit, we've had a couple of personal conversations about it. It's one of those things we're speaking a lot.
Yes.
And it's not
and rapidly.
Rapidly. It's not all just a bunch of facts and figures. There's data in there for sure.
Right.
But a lot of it comes down to the stories we tell, whether it's a story about a company, you just shared one,
right.
Or a story about a personal event or something else. And so I wanted to take a minute and share just a random handful of stories, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Just to talk about
stories about stories.
We have stories about everything. But just talk about that because I'll let you explain this before I comment.
Yeah.
But why is storytelling like a competency that someone needs to succeed?
I think because from as human beings, since we've had language, the way we've communicated important things is through stories. Mythology and teaches morality and rules and, you know, the biblical stories and the way we've passed along information for generations, for millennia, has been through stories. The really important stuff gets a story. And I think it's just it's part of who we are as human beings. And so it also personalizes it because the data is great. You and I both love data. Nothing makes us happier than a new data set because we're weird like that. But there's the data, which people take comfort in saying, okay, a bunch of people agree with me or think this is the right thing to do. But then what does it feel like? Because we're human beings, right? And data, we can see all the data we want and believe in the data and have personal experience. The data works, but we don't always believe it. You know, I've been using the example of, you know, I know I feel better when I get up and work out and eat well, but it's really hard to do, and I don't do it most days. So even in the face of data, it's really hard to learn our lessons, and I think that's where the stories come in and help people see what it actually feels like and what it actually is going to be like.
Absolutely. So let me tell you, I'll tell a quick story that I told this morning.
Excellent.
To kind of open it up and to get people thinking in the right direction. Again, these are, we like didn't plan these. These stories are like all over the place. So last year, this event called SourceCon, they bring all the best recruiters and sourcers together to put together all their hacks and ideas on how to be great at finding the talent nobody else can find. So all these like mad scientists of recruiting. Well, they have a competition called the Grandmaster Competition, very grandiose title.
And talk about branding, right?
I know, absolutely. And so they'll hold this competition, and last year they actually had an algorithm competing against the people for the first time.
Oh,
and so what you do is you download 5,000 blinded resumes. You download 3 job descriptions. These were actual jobs that were filled in an actual company, and these are the people that applied. Again, they've been anonymized. And you get points for every candidate you pick that was interviewed and hired.
Wow.
So you got to pick from those 5,000 plus resumes and find those right ones that were interviewed and hired for the jobs.
Wow.
So spoiler alert, I'll tell you the ending. The human won.
Yeah.
Kind of Randy Morrow beat the algorithm.
Beat the machine.
Came in first place. A pair of people came in second. The algorithm came in third, and anybody else was after that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it took the humans between 4 and 24 hours to get all of their calculations and searching and figuring done. It took the algorithm 3.2 seconds to do that.
And so which is more valuable?
So the moral of the story there was that human ingenuity, that when you go back and read his account of how Randy beat the algorithm, he talks about how he used his instinct a little bit, how he used some of the tools and tricks and everything else he's learned. That creativity is what's going to help set us apart. And that's the piece I was trying to make the point this morning about innovation being something we need. But again, the story has nothing to do with the rest of the conversation. But it's an example of how to connect people and get them like, you're waiting to hear who won.
Right.
You wanted to know at the end of the story. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think we were talking last night about the gift of storytelling, right? And how did we know stories were important or that we could tell stories? And I used to joke that in college they called me Rose. If you're old enough to remember the Golden Girls, right? Rose always had to say an Olaf story, which is a little offensive, but because she was also kind of a ditz. But you can name a topic. Talk about a bananas and Brett Favre. You know, I might have a story. But we were saying last night when I learned that I could tell a story and captivate people, I was at one of my first jobs, and I'm not a golf fan. I don't watch golf. I happened to catch like 5 minutes of Sergio Garcia's, I think, first Masters appearance or first major tournament appearance. I don't know all the golf terms, but it was a big golfing event. And Sergio Garcia was very young. And he hit a shot into some tree roots. And he, instead of taking the penalty and like dropping it back on the green, which I think is what could happen. It's golf, so. But basically, he decided to hit it from the tree roots. And he calculated and looked and looked and looked. And he and his caddy talked about it. And then he basically closed his eyes and took a giant swing, which not only was a risk in terms of, you know, getting it onto the green, which he did, but he could have broken his arm, taken a full swing, you know, into a tree branch, which he managed to miss. It's not like hitting the tee, you know. And I was telling the story at a group of people at lunch, and they were captivated. And at the end of the story, someone said to me, I don't even like golf, and I couldn't wait to hear the end of that story. And I was like, oh, there's something to this, you know.
Same kind of thing. So
we have to have stories about how to tell stories.
You know, stories about everything. And going back to the point I made earlier, I asked you to kind of elaborate on it, but storytelling is a way to help connect with people with the message you have to share, whether it's data, whether it's trying to influence them, whatever it happens to be. And all too often, actually had ran this hackathon event a couple months ago. And the team that won one of their sessions, their idea was that managers have to go through a storytelling training before they can present any data to anyone. And so they have to, prior to coming into that meeting, know, okay, what's the goal? What's the point? Like, what's the story I'm going to weave around this? I'm not just going to throw all the stuff at you and hope that you soak in what matters, but I'm going to tailor it because I know that Molly cares about, not about golf, but about her husband. And so we're going to tailor it to marriage. We're going to tailor it to, like, whatever it happens to be.
Well, and it brings out your passion. You and I are talking about this too. When you talk about something with passion, it really makes a difference. I'm talking about my husband. He works for a utility and they have an arborist because, you know, when you have utility wires, you need to trim trees around that and you need an expert. And he's like, I like trees as much as the next guy. But when you hear this woman talk about trees, you're drawn in because she has passion about trees. And I think, you know, when I was first becoming a speaker, that's one of the things that I was taught, which is if you have passion about it, you're always going to be memorable. And I think there's nothing wrong with realizing there's some, we have to bring some entertainment value to our data as well. We love data and love to be locked in the dark with our data and the writing about it, but you have to get out and make it real for people and make it usable.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's a tip, a pointer, a helpful insight that you have for someone if they're going to try to do a better job of that? Maybe, hey, maybe this, the title of this needs to be, you know, how to be a better speaker, you know, whatever it is, or maybe it's just presenting internally, you know, speaking in that context. What ideas would you give them?
Well, I think, you know, we were talking last night too about how do you become a writer and how do you become a speaker. One of it is to do it. And the other thing is to watch good people who do it. So, you know, if you want to write, read good books. If you want to speak, listen to good speakers. And think about what it is that drew you in. Because it's never all the data. And I think it's also important to remember, people are not going to remember every slide. If they take away one or two things, you're lucky and you've done your job. And actually, I had a very gratifying moment at this conference earlier. I was in the audience listening to someone present who had been in my session earlier and echoed something that I'd said and, you know, brought up that point. And it wasn't about that it was me. It was about that, like, it was so exciting that you turned on something in their brain that they remembered.
Yes.
And they don't ever have to remember my name or my firm's name or what we're talking about. But they had that idea that, like, I heard someone say this and it was meaningful to me. And so I think it's, so think about what's personally meaningful to you. And bring what's relatable, you know, for yourself. You know, we all have our own experiences, and people are curious about people. You know, they want to know about you, even if they don't want to know you, right? So when you speak from personal stories, I think it brings out your passion. And I also think, you know, think creatively about what is the story here. What am I trying to get across? The method can be your message. Today I was talking about onboarding, and I actually used the hero's journey, which is sort of a literary reference, right? The stock characters in literature, you know, the hero, the fool, and there's this arc, this journey that heroes go on, from call to action to being able to gain some skills, and then going through a dark challenge and sort of darkness of the soul and recovering, and then coming back to the real world, you know, with a new ability, transformed. And I related that to onboarding because it's a lot more interesting to think about this hero's journey, right? Mm-hmm. And think about how you translate it to onboarding. So I think it's about making connections that make sense for you, what feels right for you.
Yeah, that reminds me, actually, I'd forgotten about it, but I saw someone present on the employee experience recently, and they're talking about designing it. Not just, you know, laying out the life cycle of the employee, but actually trying to design an experience in this. And they went through and talked about, like, Greek architecture or something like that. And we're like talking about different components of it and saying, this is the purpose for that thing. Here's how that purpose could translate to this. And so they're trying to plant those things in your mind so you remember it later. You might not remember the data points or everything else.
But you remember,
that story, you're like, oh yeah, you know, I remember that story and how that kind of applied. And I'm a sucker for stories. I'm always looking for one. I always try to soak them in.
Well, you and I were talking about this last night too, because we talk about my memories. You know, I tend to blog personally and professionally, and even my professional blogs are personal. I can't not do it. It's very hard for me to keep myself out of the stories I'm telling. But you know, when you tell personal stories, it's really, you have to decide that you're going to let that out. But I think it's also important to think about when I blog for myself. Sorry, just went out of my head.
When you blog for yourself.
When I blog for myself. See, that's the problem with stories. You have so many stories. Oh, I talk about the fact that, you know, I came from a theater background, and it was all about telling stories. And when you tell stories about yourself, you always come through your own filter. So I probably lie in most of my stories because it's the truth of that I experienced, right? So I was writing something about my dad recently, and it was not for work. It was sort of for personal on Facebook. But I knew, you know, professional people see it, so I tried to make it clean. But the idea of some of those things that I wrote about probably aren't precisely true, but they are the truth that I remember or the stories that I was told.
Perspective.
And my perspective. And I think that's also important to bring to it too, right? So you're always going to come through your own filter, which people can find interesting. And I think you have to acknowledge that it is your own filter, but that's what makes it special. That's what makes it you. And what makes it emotional too. I think that's, we tend to not think about emotion in business, but I think the emotional connection is still really important, even if it's data driven.
Well, because it goes back to the passion point you made earlier. When you're passionate Absolutely. About something, when you're sharing about that, and they can sense it.
Yeah.
When you're going through that routine, and they can tell that you've already talked about this once or twice right. or 100 times, and I mean, right. even you're sharing this presentation again that you've already shared other times. Yeah. But when you're passionate about it, it cuts through some of that, and they can tell, yeah. they can feel that. And they want to be excited about it too. Again, it's one of those weird things. It's hard to just turn on, but if you can get it to click the right way, you right. can get people really excited about the topic that you're sharing.
And I think it's also for me, it's easier for me to remember if there's a story. So some of it's a trick for us. We want you to remember, but if I had to remember all the data points, it's like, oh, geez, it's pretty hard to remember dry data points. But if, like, if I can string a story together for myself, right, mm-hmm. then it's like, oh, I can remember. Because I'm not one of I can't use notes when I present. I have to have it in my bones.
Yeah.
And as much as I have a theater background, I was never on stage because that just terrified me. Speaking other people's words is very difficult for me. But I can go up and talk about something I know with no problem. And I think that's why, for me, the stories are helpful because to get it in my bones, I need the stories to remember, you know, what I'm going to talk about next.
So I've got an example of when I did that, actually. Yeah. So 2 years ago, I presented at the HR Tech conference. Steve, the conference chair, had asked me to do the Ideas and Innovators 5-minute Ignite style session where 5 minutes long.
20 slides auto advance.
20 slides, they auto advance every 15 seconds. And so you have to be very, very tight on your time. You have to know your stuff. And so I wanted to make the point that the contingent workforce is growing as a portion of the population, but not just people are losing all their jobs, but they're doing it in addition to their jobs. And I had some data and charts and everything else to throw in there. I even had a joke to throw in there to make it to connect everybody in. The problem was I didn't like to think about they've got to have time to laugh and I've got to recover and get them going. And I like lost half my time on that slide. But I felt so rushed. If you go back and listen to it, it sounds like it was going so fast you couldn't understand some of the stuff I was saying. And last year I did it again. And instead I said, I have a story that I'm going to tell about this personal experience. I'm going to weave through these three main points, but I'm not in any rush, and I'll have a couple visual cues on the slides, but there's no words at all, really, on the slides. It's very, very open, and it felt better. It felt smoother.
It was brilliant.
And I enjoyed it much more delivering it.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those things, that format's hard, but that helped to make it. And that's the advice I give everybody. I had a friend that had to do it the first time in November last year, and she was terrified. I'm like, tell your story. Use the slide just as kind of a cue for how much time you have left, but don't make them the focal point because they want to hear you tell the story anyway.
And that was sort of, I'm between year one and year two, because when you did your beautiful year two, I was right before you doing my year one with my nerves. But I think I was partway there, right? Because I had stories and I had slides that didn't have words. So if they advanced, it would be okay. But I think I wasn't as comfortable as I needed to be. And I don't know if it was personal or because of the time format, because I can talk for an hour really easily.
One slide, talking for five hour,
minutes,
you're good.
My intro is 5 minutes. Yeah. It's a good story, my intro. But and that's actually another trick that I learned from speaking as well. Someone told me, have your first 2 minutes the same no matter what you're talking about, your introduction of yourself, because it gives you that breathing moment to tell the story you know really, really well, get settled in, let the nerves sort of dissipate, and then talk about the new content. And that was such a good tip, I would have to say, because it does, even if you're a pro, there's that moment of adrenaline, and there should be, right? You need that moment of adrenaline. But if you have the same story you tell as your intro, you know, if it gets you through that first 2 minutes, then you're golden. And I found that to be such a useful tip.
So can I offer a counterpoint to that?
Yes.
Something that works for me, because we're obviously not all carbon copies.
You and I have so much, we're practically twins.
Nerd twins.
Nerd twins.
In the nicest sense.
Yes.
So the way that I've started doing it is, and it weirds people out on webinars when I work with someone, 'cause you're like, hey, your slides are out of order. Like I'm like, no, this is not supposed to be. So I'll start with the story before I actually go to like, here's the agenda and here's my intro, like all the other stuff. I put it after a quick story.
Oh, see, because my intro is a story. It's three stories.
Okay, we still are on the same page then. Yeah. But I'll start off, and depending on the topic, I have a handful that I'll kind of default to. But the story starts it off because I want them instantly connecting. If you start off with, here's my list of accomplishments, and you know, I've been published in these publications, and these are the degrees that I have.
My bio. Like,
me too.
Don't read. I'm like, haven't talked to me as a human, right? Like,
I had to submit that because you made me do it. Don't go back and read that. That hurts me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because here it was great because our moderator said, "How do you want me to introduce you?" And I said, "Minimally."
Yes. What's the minimum you can get away with and still consider
name and title? You know, consider And it's because I do tell a story. You know, and I talk about being a data geek and how I explain that. Should I tell the story?
You're welcome to. Go for it.
We'll tell the stories. Being a data geek, and I tell a story about, I was trying to tell my, you know, I always joke, I wish I was a ballerina or a fireman because then people would know what I do. my father still doesn't know what I do. He knows I travel a lot and he can only find me on my cell phone. So, but it's not, being an analyst is not a job a lot of people understand, but I was trying to explain to my friend's son, who was seven at the time, what we do. And I was really proud of myself because I came up with this description. I said, you know, I ask people questions and I use math to figure out how many people do certain things, and I write about it, which I was like, that's actually a pretty good, you know,
it's a very good
decent
summary.
Description. And he looked at me and goes, math and writing, that sounds awful.
You're thinking that sounds heavenly.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a pretty good career. Don't knock it, kid. But, So I talk about being a data geek, and then I talk about being a storyteller, which we've talked about ad nauseum. And then for me, when I'm doing stage work, right, I happen to have Parkinson's disease. Mm-hmm. And I tell a story about that because if I am moving funny, I don't want people to worry about it. And I also tell the joke of, you know, I'm not nervous or drunk, or I might be all the time, and people will just never know.
You just have no idea.
But at that point, it relaxes me. It relaxes them. I've told a little story. I've gotten personal. I've also made, if I am awkward, you know, I've always been awkward. Now I'm medically awkward. You know, I've eliminated that. People can concentrate on what I have to say. And I can concentrate on what I have to say. And so then I can launch into the new content. Mm. And I think because people connect with you as a human, right? It's like, here's who I am and here's what I'm about. And now we can have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I think, too, you're talking about, like, tips. I think you're watching good people. You know, our friend Lori Rudiman, right? She's somebody who I know owns her craft. You know, Trish McFarland and, you know, people who, Madeline Lorano, my partner.
Oh, yeah.
You know, watching great people present, you always pick up tricks and how they engage and how they, you know, are personal or not, or, you know, how they walk around the stage or things like that. I think it really is making it your home, you know, making yourself, if you make yourself comfortable, you make your audience comfortable, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, again, maybe we'll title this one how to be more effective at presenting,
how
or something like
stories.
That. How to tell
story
stories.
Story time with Ben and Molly.
I like it. Let me write that down. But again, fun conversation. It's one of those things I love talking about. It's one of those things, again, people that don't know us personally, they learned a little more about us today. Yeah. They got to figure out more about what we do.
Well,
we're data
nerds
with math, all that good stuff.
Well, and it's funny, too, because I think we're all a little quirky, and I say that with love. All us analysts are a little quirky. And I firmly believe it's because the two skills of being able to go in the cave and do the numbers and do the writing, and then to be sociable and be have an executive presence and be able to present, those aren't supposed to happen in the same brain.
They're opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. And so we're all a little bit weird. But that's okay because we all, you know, appreciate that in each other, and it allows us to have these kind of conversations. I always think it's such a privilege to have this job. We get invited into companies to hear stories and to look at their data, and it's such a privilege to have this job and be able to share those stories with people and to, you know, hang out with people like you, Ben. And I think this is definitely a privileged job, but I think anybody can use the ability to tell stories to make their job more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
awesome.
That's all I have to say about that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you guys, you and Madeline, you mentioned her a minute ago.
Yes.
You guys have your own podcast.
We do. Research on the Rocks.
Yeah. Imagine that.
It's your happy hour, baby.
Absolutely. But if someone else wants to just find you, connect with you, if they're not listening already, they're not an avid fan of Molly and all the work you're doing, how can
and
they find
Madeline.
You?
And Madeline. I mean, don't forget Madeline.
Yes.
She's my better half. So we are at Talk to ARP on Twitter, at Molly Lombardi, Molly with an IE, at Madeline Lorano. On Twitter, and then also aptitudesearchpartners.com is our URL, so you can find us there. I'm pretty easy to Google because there's only one IE, Molly Lombardi, I think, at least in the first couple pages of Google. So,
excellent.
Aptitude Research Partners, Research on the Rocks, HR Happy Hour website, podcast website, you can get our links. And we have a great one coming up with our first interview guest.
Oh, exciting.
Yes, very
good
exciting.
Stuff. I can't wait to hear it. I've enjoyed, I know you guys took a little bit of a break, but you've come back, and it's been really interesting to hear your voices. I miss you. Again, we see each other face to face occasionally on the road, and so it's been great. Thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Thanks for inviting me on the podcast to tell stories.
Anytime, Molly. Anytime. You're always welcome.
Excellent.
To everybody else, thank you for joining us today. This has been Ben Eubanks, your host, and I'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.